If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America at PWTorchLivecast.com. Good Sunday evening, everybody. I am Torch columnist Greg Parks with another edition of Wrestling Night in America for Sunday, December 2nd, 2018. If you want to call in and talk to me and my guest co-host for the week, Zach Haydorn, who I will bring on momentarily, you can dial 515-605-9345 and press 1 to talk so you show up in the queue. But our big announcement, which I touted on Twitter when I plugged the show about an hour ago, is that we now have an email address that you can reach us as well, and we'll take email questions throughout the show starting tonight. WNIA, for Wrestling Night in America, WNIALivecast@gmail.com. So if you are not going to listen live to future shows, but you know you have a question that you want myself and my guest co-host of that week to talk about, feel free to email us in ahead of time. I'll line up those emails and we'll address those on the show. If you're listening live and for whatever reason don't want to talk to us over the phone, you can certainly email as you hear what we're talking about. And if something that we talk about triggers a thought, an idea, or a question, you can send us an email. I'll be monitoring throughout the show. And, of course, on pay-per-view nights, when we go on the air live after WWE pay-per-views, you can have that window up. And as the pay-per-view's going on, if you know you're not going to be able to listen live and you have a question about something that happened on the pay-per-view, email us WNIALivecast@gmail.com. That is our number. You can, of course, still call in 515-605-9345, but that is new starting this week here on Wrestling Night in America. What is not new this week on Wrestling Night in America is my co-host, who has been with me several times, and it's always a joy talking wrestling with him. It is PWTorch.com contributor Zach Haydorn. Zach, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America.
Greg, thanks very much for having me. Always like talking wrestling with you, man, so appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely, and a lot to talk about this week, an eventful Raw,
yeah,
as well as SmackDown. We've got NXT, which taped in San Jose, a unique taping there. We'll talk a little bit about that later on. 205 Live, we'll get to that as Zach covers that for the Torch, and we don't get a lot of 205 Live play here on Wrestling Night in America. We'll also do a little bit of a preview of TLC. We'll do a full preview next week. And then we will talk about a little bit about Impact as we move forward on the show. Next week, we will have our big TLC preview show. It'll be the last show before TLC on December 16th. And, of course, as I stated earlier, when there is a WWE pay-per-view, we go on the air at Wrestling Night in America immediately after that pay-per-view, taking your calls, your thoughts, your opinions, your concerns and everything else is on the table for that pay-per-view. So that will be December 16th. We'll have a full TLC preview on next week's show. We'll also probably do a bit of a preview of Impact Wrestling Homecoming next weekend, which is January 6th. So we will get to those next week. Raw. This was a unique thing for me because I am usually someone who watches the entirety of Raw live. I've gotten away from that the last couple weeks, so I was not shocked, a little dismayed maybe, to wake up Monday morning and read my Twitter feed and see that there was universal disdain for this episode of Monday Night Raw. In fact, to the point that I wrote my column in this coming week's Torch newsletter on this past episode of Monday Night Raw and what went wrong and questions I have about what I saw on the show. Zach, you provide alternative perspective coverage of the show on PWTorch.com. I guess my first question to you is, as someone who covers the show each week in written form, was this show as bad as many people are saying it was?
Yeah, I mean, it was as bad as everybody says it was. I mean, well, maybe not as everybody says it was, because if you would have gone on Twitter at about, 9 Central Monday night, you would have thought the collective wrestling world was burning down in flames. And was it that bad? No. But the show itself really, it it had no substance to it. It had no real foundational direction of where different storylines are going. You just got the feeling that not only were the writers going through the motions, but you had no buy-in from the talent either. You had them out there cutting their scripted promos with no emotion behind it, with no passion for their characters or for their stories or for where, you know, they want to take these different arcs that are at play. And on top of that, you layer in a storyline that is just solely based on getting heel heat for Baron Corbin, of all people. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of this blah trudge of a show that really, really was difficult to get through. It really was, top to bottom. As soon as, you know, the first note of the show hit to kick things off, you kind of got the sense that, hey, this is we're in for a long night. There was just you couldn't see a payoff in sight, you know. And I get that you need to build heat, and I get you need to, you know, build these heels up, but I don't think on Raw right now you have that credible babyface payoff to make this heat worth it. And I think the audience recognized that, can see that, and it affected the way they were watching the show Monday night.
Where I draw the delineation here for Monday Night Raw in the pantheon of bad episodes of Raw, and there have been a lot, is I don't think this was necessarily damaging booking as far as any kind of long-term or even really short-term direction.
Right.
I don't think we're coming out of this episode of Raw saying, man, I can't believe X is no longer viable as a top guy. Y was, you know, shunted down the card, and, you know, what's going on with that? I think it was more of a bad episode as far as nothing going on, poorly written and poorly, as you pointed out, poorly acted. And the angles that were on this episode of Raw were not good. And I think this was a bad episode as far as being self-contained. I don't think it was damaging in the long term or even the short term heading into TLC. I guess that's where my line of delineation would go.
Yeah, I definitely agree on that. I mean, I think we may look, you know, two weeks out now, I guess, to the Raw after TLC and look back to that show and go, wow, okay. Now that all makes sense from a booking perspective. You know, you got all this heat on Baron Corbin, and you have him as more of a credible, dangerous heel authority figure with Bobby Lashley and Drew McIntyre at his side. And after TLC is all said and done, you know, we get a little bit of payoff to that, whether it's Braun Strowman coming back or, you know, Finn Balor and Elias getting their comeuppance. I think that all is okay. I think it's just from a sheer enjoyment of a show perspective, mm-hmm. like you touched on, that's what was missing. There was nothing for the audience to grab onto and to get behind to say, oh yeah, I'm with this guy, or I can't wait to see Finn Balor get his hands on whoever it was, Baron Corbin or Drew McIntyre or what have you. Just didn't have that in-show moment or collective set of moments that made it interesting to watch. But I agree, the booking, I don't think that's I think that's fine, actually. I mean, like I said, you have to have some heat. The only caveat to that would be, I think you look at this show, if you're WWE, and you say, great, we have all this heat on the heels right now. Baron Corbin, I mean, I think we can have a pretty interesting discussion about him as a heel. He gets the negative reaction. Is it go-away heat or is it heel heat? Who knows these days, but it's negative nonetheless. The question I would have if I was WWE coming out of Monday Night Raw is, you know, where are our baby faces? You know, where are our guys that are going to be able to capitalize on that heat, and where's the other side of that coin that's going to make people go, oh, I need to watch this show so I can watch babyface X, babyface Y take down this evil regime of Baron Corbin? And WWE doesn't really have that right now, and Raw doesn't have that right now. I mean, they have the guys, but you look at Finn Balor and how he's been portrayed the last few months as a babyface, not too much there. Elias is a guy who just turned babyface and is just finding his footing in that role. So I think there's still to be work done on that end. And with Braun Strowman on the shelf and Seth Rollins involved in a different storyline altogether, it's a weak lineup to go against the heel tandem of Lashley, McIntyre, and Corbin. So that, from a booking perspective, that's my two cents on that part of it. They got to find that babyface and heat them up properly to take advantage of this heat infested Monday Night Raw that we just had.
You mentioned earlier the push of Baron Corbin, who is the acting Raw general manager, calling himself the general manager-elect, which doesn't make sense in any sort of context. You know, he was in a very long opening segment on this show doing an interview, which turned into him being ringside for Lashley versus Elias. You had him in backstage segments. I remember the one with Alexa Bliss where he appointed her in charge of the women's division. And then he was also in the main event against Finn Balor. I mean, what do you make of this push of Baron Corbin getting so much TV time? You look back at his WWE career, he's a guy who we thought WWE had given up on at various stages of his early WWE career. And now here he is getting all this TV time. Is there anything about him from a character point of view, interviews, in-ring work that you can point to and say, yeah, he's deserving of this push? Or is he just, you know, with Strowman out, with Roman Reigns out, I know they're both baby faces, but is he just kind of the next man up here to get a lot of this TV time, replacing the TV time that would normally go to a Reigns or a Strowman?
Yeah, I think you're right on the money. I think he's just kind of the guy that's there right now. I think he's a guy that clearly has built up some trust with Vince McMahon and the writers to maybe not go out there and you know, do the best job in the world, but get the job done. You know, get from point A to point B in an effective way and hit your marks and, you know, and that's it. And, you know, so it's kind of like he's a B-level guy who can just put in a good performance and you can trust him when you need him. But on my VIP audio show this week on the Canvas, I talked about Monday Night Raw, much like you probably wrote about it this week. But and I said on that show, you know, if you're a first-time viewer of Monday Night Raw and you turned on the show and you saw Baron Corbin, you'd have no other choice but to think that he's a really important guy within this WWE narrative just because of how much time he gets on a week-to-week basis on Monday Night Raw. And if you're kind of the hardcore viewer and the fan who's been watching forever, you know that that's not the case. But the TV time that he gets doesn't line up with how he's portrayed in the, you know, the structure of WWE. I mean, he gets more time than a Seth Rollins does on the microphone. You know, really has his teeth all over that show for better or for worse. And like I said, I think he kind of is just that middle of the road guy that gets that negative reaction. He's really bland in that heel role, but hey, people are booing him and there is some upside there because of it. I think he does have this kind of natural ability to make you not like him. You know, I don't think he's, I think he's genuine and authentic in how he comes off to the crowd as far as his personality goes and his charisma goes. But, and I think that's good. I think that's kind of like an intangible it factor that a lot of guys don't have. What I think he really needs to work on is those backstage vignettes, the backstage segments where, and even his promo sometimes in the middle of the ring where it comes off like, it's almost like there's a, you know, teleprompter right in front of him and he's just reading and reading and reading and it's kind of this, you know, monotone voice. So I think he's got some parts of his game that he needs to work on, but he's got something there. I wanted to see him take it to that next level, but I'm not sure that he's in a role that he's able to right now.
You know, I think he's fine. I think he's, as far as an upper mid-card heel, I'm fine with him. He's got that unlikability about his character that just makes you want to boo him, and I think you alluded to that here. You know, his in-ring work is acceptable. He can bring it up a couple notches, but he can also bring guys down to his level, unfortunately. But what I don't think he is a guy who can bookend a show, a good show, quality show, with long segments.
Yeah.
And we saw that here. And I think he's a guy that needs good writing to shine. And we've seen glimpses of that with WWE creative over the years for Baron Corbin. But we've also seen, you know, what we saw this past week on Raw, where, and through no fault of his own, I don't think he and Finn Balor should be main eventing the end of a three-hour show. At this stage of the game,
many
times as they've wrestled, and with the finish of this, which was yet another Baron Corbin changing the match to, you know, involve Drew McIntyre, you know, it's something we saw earlier in the show. You know, this was not a novel concept that they were
right,
presenting to
right.
us. And we'd seen it weeks prior. So if they had something new, and I get that they're trying to get heat on these heels, and I just think there's a better way to do it than rehashing the same tired angle that you've already done on the same show. So I think there is some value to Baron Corbin, but is he a guy that should be bookending two 20-minute segments of Monday Night Raw? No, I don't think so. Not on a good week.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. I think too, like if you maybe it would be okay if you had, you know, that hot baby face that was going to go up against him, where at the beginning of the show, he kind of, you know, lays down whatever challenge it is. And by the end of the show, you're going to get to see that hot baby face, you know, get his comeuppance finally. Like, okay, then I can maybe see him kind of bookending the show. But you're right. In the role that he's in right now and what he has going on right now and the way he's being written right now, it's too much of the same to carry through a three-hour show. It makes it hard to get through. It really does.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
What do you make of this triumvirate of Baron Corbin, Drew McIntyre, and Bobby Lashley? I wrote a little bit about this in my column that's coming up, and they don't seem to have a lot of chemistry together. I guess you could make the argument that McIntyre and Lashley are just sucking up to the power heel in the company by aligning themselves with mm-hmm. him. But to me, I think it's good for Lashley because I think he's yeah. better playing off a Leo Rush or guys like that. I don't think it really helps Drew McIntyre. And I don't know why they're doing this with Drew McIntyre, where he debuted or returned and immediately he was paired with Dolph Ziggler. Now that Ziggler, he was hurt for a short time, he's kind of off doing his own thing after the breakup of Strowman, Ziggler, and McIntyre. Now they've got McIntyre with Lashley and Corbin here. To me, McIntyre's character should be that lone wolf kind of guy. So what do you make of this threesome, and have they been effective? Can they be effective going forward?
All right, here's my take on it, and it's really kind of like up in the air at this point, because I think we ultimately need to see where it goes. But on the surface, I'm with you. I don't like to see Drew McIntyre out there kind of just being a right-hand man, lackey guy for Baron Corbin, of all people, you know, because Drew McIntyre to me is not that guy. He's the guy that I can see main eventing WrestleMania in a few years. I mean, he's got that type of main event star power about him, and I don't like to see that star power neutralized in him being the sidekick to another storyline. Now, that said, I think Baron Corbin does need something behind him to establish some sort of dangerous heel credibility, because up to this point he's kind of just been the dopey Raw general manager, and yeah, he abuses power and he kind of gets in the face of baby faces and he changes the rules in the middle of matches, but there's no sense of danger or fear there. There's no sense of, oh gosh, Baron Corbin is a monster. I better, you know, get in line and do what he says or else, you know, I'm going to be in trouble. He doesn't have that credibility. He just hasn't been booked that way since he's been on the main roster, and especially since he's been general manager of Monday Night Raw. Mm-hmm. Bobby Lashley and Drew McIntyre give him some of that credibility. He can come out there and say that he's taken down Braun Strowman and he's put, you know, the monster among men on the shelf. So from a short-term perspective, I think it can work in establishing Baron Corbin as a little bit more of a credible heel. Long-term, though, I do think it hurts Drew McIntyre to be standing out there as a sidekick, because the ceiling is way higher for him than just sidekick. And this paints him and defines him a little bit down. I mean, it defines him as less than Baron Corbin.
Yeah.
I don't think WWE wants to go down that route for too long.
Well, we talked about some of the bigger picture issues with this episode of Raw. Let's get into the minutia here. The opening segment was Baron Corbin calling himself the general manager-elect, saying that Braun Strowman, his scheduled opponent for TLC, may not make it to the pay-per-view due to the elbow surgery he had. Elias interrupted, and we ended up having a match with Elias. Elias losing to Lashley. An attack by Drew McIntyre and Baron Corbin was included at the end. Lucha House Party defeated the Revival in a Lucha House Party rules. Ronda Rousey confronted Nia Jax, who was conducting an in-ring interview. She was performing an in-ring interview. The AOP defeated Bobby Roode and Chad Gable. Drake Maverick stole Bobby Roode's robe and took it backstage urinated on it. can't believe I'm talking about this. Ember Moon defeated...
That's a real sentence, or did you just make...
Yeah, that was not made up, folks. If you missed Raw, that's what you missed. real high class entertainment here. Ember Moon defeated Alicia Fox. Jinder Mahal over No Way Jose. I did not start reading WWE main event results. That actually happened on Raw this week. Seth Rollins defeated Dolph Ziggler in an Intercontinental Title Open Challenge match. Bayley and Sasha – we're not done yet, believe it or not. Bayley and Sasha Banks had an open forum in the ring hosted by Alexa Bliss. And then we had Corbin defeating Finn Balor after he turned the match into a 2-on-1 and Drew McIntyre helped him win. This coming week on Raw, what's been announced is Ronda Rousey and Natalya in a tag team match against Nia Jax and Tamina. And Dean Ambrose will be there. He's gotten all of his shots now, so he's ready to go. So many things that I want to ask you about, Zach, and I don't want to take up a ton of time on this since we've already spent 20 minutes on Raw, but three things from this I want to ask you about. First is Dean Ambrose. Previous week it was, oh my gosh, everybody in LA smells. This week he's actually getting shots on camera because he's afraid of getting diseases from the people in Milwaukee, I guess. So to me, this is cheap heat that Dean Ambrose doesn't need to slum for. He's a good enough heel on his own, and Seth Rollins is a good enough babyface that I don't think WWE has to worry about people cheering Ambrose and booing Rollins if, in fact, that's what they're worried about. Why have they turned Ambrose into this germaphobe over the last 2 weeks? Did someone upset Vince McMahon? What's the deal here?
I don't have a great answer for that question because I don't know. I said this exact same thing that you just did as I covered Monday Night Raw. It's just that, you know, he doesn't need to go there. Was it an god-awful segment? No. But is it needed from Dean Ambrose? Also, no. I mean, you can have a legitimate, you know, heel versus babyface feud here. I mean, it's one of the few times in WWE these days where that's all you can do, all you have to do. You have Seth Rollins, he's the hottest heel on Monday Night Raw. You have Dean Ambrose, who not only hottest babyface on Monday Night Raw, so Rollins, but you have Ambrose, who is a hot heel in his own right. He knows how to work that style. He's got great chemistry with Seth Rollins. And, you know, this should be a feud where you just write a couple lines, put them in front of a camera and just say, go. Like with what happened on Monday night, it just seems to me that there's just too many cooks in the kitchen and just trying to overproduce a feud and a story that just doesn't need that type of production. As far as Ambrose goes, you know, I thought he teetered on being too much of that goofy Dean Ambrose in that skit. I think up to this point, since the heel turn, Ambrose has really done a great job in my eyes of being that serious heel that you really don't want to cross because you don't know what he's going to do. And here, I don't know that he crossed the line into silly Dean Ambrose, but he really teetered on the edge of it. And I want to see him go back the other way, be the serious guy that is about taking down Rollins and rectifying everything that happened with the Shield. My other note on this is WWE's got to pick a lane and stay in it. I mean, I don't think you can have Dean Ambrose 1 week, you know, making an allusion to Roman Reigns and everything that Reigns has going on from a health perspective to get heel heat, and then the next week talk about dirty people from Milwaukee. Like, there's just such a disconnect and such a vast space in between those two kinds of heels that it's like, you know, it almost throws what they did with Dean the week before and with Roman, it just running under the bus. It's almost like you just totally neutralize that after you quote unquote went there by dumbing it down the next week. So I would pull back on this. It doesn't need these silly gimmicks. It's just straight up wrestling feud here. Good guy, bad guy, let him go.
Ambrose now feuding with former Shield partner Seth Rollins, who conducted a Intercontinental Title Open Challenge on Raw on Monday night. The challenge was answered by Dolph Ziggler, and the two had their usual really good match. Crowd got very into it by the end. In fact, I thought this probably should have been the main event over Balor versus Corbin. But, you know, I don't want to be accused of piling on to a bad episode and picking out probably what's one of the very few bright spots in this Rollins-Ziggler match, but what did you make of the decision to have Ziggler be the one to answer the open challenge? Because historically, the open challenge, the idea of it is it allows literally anyone in the locker room to answer the challenge, including those who would not normally get that opportunity. Even if they lose to the IC champion, they get elevated. IC champ goes 50-50 with them, you know, that sort of thing. Here it was answered by Dolph Ziggler, who we've seen fight Rollins time and time again. He's been Intercontinental Champion quite recently. So I thought having Ziggler answer this challenge and really accomplishing nothing by the end of the match, you know, neither guy gained or lost anything from this. I didn't really care for that choice. As good as the match was, and as good as every Ziggler-Rollins match is, I thought they could have chosen someone who could have benefited from wrestling Rollins more so than Ziggler. Were you okay with this decision, or would you have gone a different direction with that?
I would have gone a different direction. And to me, it's all about the expectation that WWE has set with the open challenge. I think you could look at it from two angles here. One is, if you're gonna, I think they put out that it was gonna be an open challenge on Sunday afternoon or something like that. So that's almost, you know, it's over a full day of people out there speculating, expectations building, excitement building. I think WWE has to recognize that when they put out open challenge for Seth Rollins on Monday Night Raw, they got to recognize that with that hype comes delivering on that hype and delivering on those expectations. So when you do that, you set the crowd up and you have them expecting something a little bit bigger than Dolph Ziggler. I have no problem with a Dolph Ziggler versus Seth Rollins match. You know, 9 times out of 10, they're going to have a very, very good TV match on Monday Night Raw. Just the fact that WWE set it up the way that they did with the open challenge, that's where I think this veered off course, because you watch that match back and yes, it was a really good match, but you get the sense, like, at least for the first 5 to 8 minutes, that crowd's just disappointed that it's Dolph Ziggler, and they could have had a 6-star classic out there, and I don't think that the audience's minds would have changed on that, just because we've seen it so many times. Yeah. So I think that if you're going to end up doing Dolph Ziggler versus Seth Rollins, just book it as that. Just say, hey, Rollins is going to face Dolph Ziggler for the Intercontinental Championship, and you leave it at that. I think the mistake here was not necessarily in the match. It was in how the match was booked. I think they really swung in this.
And to be fair to WWE, they may have thought, hey, Dolph Ziggler answers the open challenge. Ziggler is a big enough star to where people will want to tune in to watch this match, and it'll be a really good match. And so those fans who tune in for the quality of wrestling will be satisfied with that. So I get their thinking on it, if that's where their mind was. I just would have preferred something different, and that's kind of how I looked at that.
Yeah, and I think also, too, they set up earlier in the night that, you know, you're not going to get a Dean Ambrose appearance. So if you're not going to get a Dean appearance, you're probably not going to get a title change. So it is Dolph Ziggler. And so then you almost know the outcome of it before the match even starts. So you had that factor in, too. So I do know what WWE was going for. And look, I also want to defend him a little bit here, too, and say if if they didn't have, like, if people were expecting some big name from NXT, what Adam Cole, for example, and WWE's not ready to bring him up. They're not ready to feature him in that way. I'm glad that they didn't just throw him in that match without a reason or direction going forward. So I'm happy WWE didn't take that step. I just think they could be a little bit more buttoned up with how they book things, because people perceive things different ways because of how WWE books, and they got caught with their pants down here on this one.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
The final note I want to talk about from Raw this past week was the open forum with Bayley and Sasha Banks, hosted by Alexa Bliss, who was put in charge of the Raw Women's Division by Baron Corbin. And the idea was that Bayley and Banks would take questions from the fans. I think only one fan, a plant, asked a question, and then it just kind of devolved, and eventually Dana Brooke and some others came out and attacked Bayley and Banks, and the end game was, well, this was all a setup by Alexa Bliss to make Bayley and Banks vulnerable, to either try to drive a wedge between them or to just put them out there in a space where they were vulnerable and could be attacked by heels that were set up by Alexa Bliss. And, you know, the whole dynamic of Bayley and Banks and Bliss has been confusing from the week before Survivor Series, where she put them in a match against each other and the winner would get to be on the Survivor Series team, and then that was all a ruse because she had them being attacked, and her plan was never to put either of them on the team, and then she puts both of them on the team the night of Survivor Series when she didn't have to, and then now she's back to trying to break them up and trying to get under their skin. So
Greg, you sound like a crazy person.
I feel like a crazy person watching this sometimes, because yeah. I feel like you feel like it Raw is a book where you read the first five chapters sometimes, and then you skip five chapters and you pick it up again, and you're like, wait a minute, wasn't this happening before? How did we get from this to this? And you have to make these leaps in your own mind, and you have to try to bridge those gaps yourself. You know, what did you make of the idea of this segment? Do you think it came across well? And, you know, anything else you want to touch on here about this segment?
Yeah, no, I don't think it came across well at all. On my alternative perspective raw report on PWTorch.com, I wrote when Alexa Bliss announced this segment backstage, by analysis, it was one sentence, and it was, this has bad written all over it. And it's just...
Bayley even conjured up images of the "This Is Your Life" segment, which was, I mean, the bottom of the barrel segment that they did, however long ago it was. Now, I mean, she even said, "Is this going to be another one of This Is Your Life segments?" Then you're like, "Oh boy, the bar has been set for what this segment is going to be like."
Yeah, exactly, and you know, and sure, I don't think it was as bad as the Bayley "This Is Your Life" segment, but. It wasn't too much better. It just didn't make any sense. Like, what, from a conceptual point of view, like an open forum for what? It's not like they had set the table that Sasha Banks and Bayley have all these gripes and issues with the women's division that they want to run by Alexa Bliss, or it's not even as if the women's division has any sort of corrupt leadership that she wants to pick the fans' brains about. Like, it just was totally out of left field. And I mean, looking at the segment when it was all said and done, I think it was simply a mechanism to drive a wedge, a larger wedge between Banks, Bayley, and Alexa Bliss. I think that's all they had in mind for it. It's just, they just went just a completely roundabout way to get there. And it's just one of those moments where you're like, hey, this is still a wrestling show. You know, you can still just do traditional pro wrestling like things on a show to get heat and to drive that wedge. You don't need to go to places like Open Forum with plant fans to get there. It's just too many bells and whistles that just got way out of hand for no reason, and it ended up making the segment hard to follow, like you said, and nonsensical in a lot of ways. So I don't know that after this segment there's more heat between Bliss and Banks and Bayley. And so if that was the goal, I'm not sure they got there, and instead they just put a very confusing segment on television. So no, it didn't work for me at all.
And I think it would have helped had Banks and Bayley been a tad more skeptical about this. As you said, there was really no point to it. There was really, I mean, this came out of left field, and it would have been better. And they did show some skepticism backstage in that segment, but like you said, there was really no purpose to this, no even setup to it, really. And so I think it would have helped had Banks and Bayley been a little more skeptical in receiving it and even playing it out in the ring.
Yeah, right. I agree.
We'll reset the show here, Wrestling Night in America, here on PWTorchLivecast.com. I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, along with PWTorch.com contributor Zach Haydorn, talking all the big events in pro wrestling, as we always do every Sunday night on this show. 515-605-9345 is the number to call if you'd like to talk to us. And starting tonight, we will also take emails, your questions and comments. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is the email address. If you're away and not able to listen and call in live with a question, you can send us an email and we'll answer it live on the show. Anytime throughout the week that you want to send something in, we'll address it the next week on the air. So before we go to talking about SmackDown, we'll go to the 814 area code and Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America this week. What's on your mind tonight?
Okay, first question I have for you is, if Matt Riddle gets called to the main roster, who do you think his first feud will be with?
I'm sorry, if who gets called up to the main roster?
When Matt Riddle eventually gets called up, who do you think he'll feud with?
Gosh. I tend to think that's still a ways away, Zach. So it's really hard to say. He seems like a Raw guy to me. And WWE, I mean, he just oozes star power. I don't think he's a guy you can just introduce like a No Way Jose and put him in the mid card and that's where he'll stay. I think he breaks the mold in a lot of ways. But he's also that guy that you don't know if Vince McMahon is going to get. You know what I'm saying? There are guys who have been super popular that have done really well in NXT and in the independent scene. They get to WWE, they get to the main roster, and Vince doesn't, quote, get them, unquote. And I just fear Matt Riddle is that kind of guy. So I think he's going to be in NXT for a while. But main roster, man. I mean, if you're looking at Raw, a good wrestler to – and who knows what the brands are going to look like when Riddle gets called up. But I like Dolph Ziggler as a guy. I know I was just kind of – down on Ziggler earlier, not on Ziggler himself, but for the situation he was put in on Raw. But I think Ziggler would be a good opponent for Riddle right off the bat upon his debut in WWE.
That was the exact name that popped into my head. And real quick about Riddle, I'm with you. I think he's a guy that just has that kind of natural it factor, oozes charisma, but you're right with Vince McMahon, because like I always just get the feeling between these guys that if Vince McMahon in real life met somebody like Matt Riddle in real life, Vince McMahon would hate that guy. He just would hate that guy. And so you wonder if he's gonna get him. But as far as I think NXT is gonna be Riddle's home for a long time. I mean, you think about it, he's just starting to get his feet wet there, and he's just got so much left to do on that brand. But yeah, when he comes up, I see him as out of the gate feuding with like kind of that upper mid card heel, like a Bobby Lashley of the world, Dolph Ziggler of the world, depending on where Drew McIntyre is at the time. He'd be a guy that he could potentially get in there with. A feud that's gonna paint him in a really good light out of the gate, but one that he could just quickly get a quick victory and move on to bigger and better things. I don't think we'll see it happen for a while here, though.
Yeah, I agree. Ryan, second question this week.
Yeah, second question I have for you is on the wedding with Aleister Black and Vega. You think that will cause her to be paired with Black and break up with trying to think of
Almas.
The name, right? Almas, yeah.
Yeah. I hope not. I really don't see the need for Aleister Black to have a manager. And if he did, I don't think Zelina Vega would be a good fit for him as a manager for that character. I think she's a tremendous fit for Almas, and I think it's criminal how they've gotten away from Vega as Almas' manager and almost made her just another female talent. And I was hoping that she would be able to wrestle, and I'm glad she's been more than just a manager for Almas, but I was hoping that they would make it special occasions when she would wrestle and that they would make it a special reason, not just another member of the women's roster, which she's kind of turned into. And it didn't help having those mixed tag matches with Almas against Rusev and Lana that got her off on the wrong foot to begin with.
Yeah.
So I don't really see that pairing working, even if Black does get called up to the main roster. I think she's just so valuable to Andrade Almas's act that he would lose a lot with her not around him.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. And I think it's more so the fact that taking her away from the Almas act is going to hurt more than she could ever give to Aleister Black with his act. I mean, he's a guy that, the nature of his character is that he's this kind of lone wolf guy. He's this dark character, and I don't know that adding Vega to that, it gives that any more juice. On the other side of the coin, though, she adds a lot to Almas. Even in his kind of watered-down place on the card right now, I mean, you look at him without her, and, I'm not even sure if he's a low card guy on SmackDown. You know, she really gives him credibility in there, and makes his presentation and act interesting. So I think it would really be criminal, as Greg said, to take her out of that spot, especially moving her over to Aleister Black.
Last question for us tonight, Ryan. What have you got?
Okay, last question, a little bit controversial. It's on the All Elite Wrestling. I heard that Tony Khan is involved with football, like with the kneeling. Do you think that could potentially take away from some of the conservative wrestling fans not wanting to support All Elite Wrestling? Because I thought there was something about the NFL hurting just a little bit from that kneeling controversy.
Well, Tony Khan himself is not kneeling because he's not a player. He's front office exec. There were some Jaguars on the team last year, and I can speak as a Jaguars fan here, that did it. That's not – I mean, that's kind of been off the radar for most of the year. So I don't really see that as a problem. Look, if you're a wrestling fan and you like Cody Rhodes and you like the Young Bucks and you like Adam Page or whoever else is going to be a part of this group, I don't think the fact that the Money Man is someone who is a front office executive in the NFL is going to stop you from enjoying this promotion if, in fact, it does happen. And we've seen on Twitter today that Cody Rhodes and Brandi Rhodes were in the owner's box at the Jacksonville game against the Colts. So that just starts the rumor mill up again that something is in the works between those folks, those parties. But I just, Zach, I don't see, the kneeling controversy is not so much a controversy anymore. I think it's most of it's blown over at this point. So I don't really see that affecting anything going forward with in regards to the relationship between the owners of the Jaguars and the possibility of All Elite Wrestling.
Yeah, that's a really hard connection for casual fans to make. Like, oh, the money guy of this new promotion is an NFL owner, and some of his members of his team kneeled. I don't like that, so I'm not going to support the promotion. Like, in a perfect world, All Elite Wrestling is not going to want the owner's, the Jaguar owner's son to be the face of this organization. You know, they want the face of that organization to be Cody Rhodes, mm-hmm. Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, and what have you. Like, that's where the focus will be. And if it's anywhere else outside of that, that attracts some of that outside attention and negativity, or however you want to frame it, like, that's going to be not good for All Elite Wrestling. They need to stay in their lane here, you know, focus on the talent and be that. I don't think, you know, getting involved in these outside controversies around, you know, the money guy at the organization is a good idea at this point. They got to find out who they are as a brand, as a company, and go. And you don't want attention on him. And I'm not sure that fans, casual fans, or even more of the, you know, the diehard WWE fans are gonna look for that, for to make that connection. So I think all involved are okay in that regard.
Yeah, I agree.
The only way I was able to make the connection was through Dave Meltzer had reported something on the kneeling thing that, you know, he didn't really have like a view on it. He just had mentioned that, and that's the only way I knew about it.
Yeah, like I said, the controversy in that regard has pretty much blown over from the perspective of football fans. So I can't imagine any wrestling fan who's excited about Cody Rhodes, who would be a fan of this promotion, someone that the All Elite Wrestling are targeting, that demographic, I don't think that they would be bothered by that.
Well said. All right. Totally agree.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
All right, Ryan.
And I could also see that Matt.
Go ahead.
I could also see Matt Riddle doing something similar to John Cena, maybe like having like a good match with Brock Lesnar, like his first match, but coming up short.
Yeah.
I don't know if they would do that.
Yeah, I would be all for that idea. You got to ask yourself, does WWE see Matt Riddle as a big enough star to where they would use one of Brock Lesnar's precious few dates on a Matt Riddle match? I mean, to me, Zach, and tell me if I'm wrong, if WWE saw Matt Riddle at that level, he would have bypassed NXT and he'd be on the main roster right now.
Yeah, exactly. I think it comes down to, for any big match that Riddle will get upon his call-up, just how WWE views him. And I think based on what we've seen so far in NXT, I think the NXT group thinks very, very highly of him. Triple H, I'm sure, thinks very, very highly of him. It's when he comes up to that main roster, it's what Vince McMahon thinks of him. And, yeah. But I think it's a great idea that if they decide, hey, this is our guy, and we want to get behind this guy, and we want to push this guy, putting him into a feud with somebody like John Cena, that's instant attention. If Cena comes back for something like that, that's instant, like, main event level stuff. It immediately puts Riddle in a different category than anybody else on Monday Night Raw, and same thing with Brock Lesnar. Again, though, it just goes down to what Vince thinks of Riddle at that time, but I'm all for that because I'm really high on that guy.
Yeah, I agree. Ryan, good talking to you this week, as usual. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, thanks for taking the call.
Sure. And if you want to call in, it's 515-605-9345. If you're listening live, you can email us at wnialivecast@gmail.com. If you're listening sometime on delay, if you're listening on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, and something we talk about triggers a thought in your head that you'd like us to discuss next week, send us an email at that address, and we will get to it next week on the show. SmackDown this week, Zach. We saw the Usos defeat the Bar. AJ Styles commented on Daniel Bryan and their feud. Shinsuke Nakamura attacked Rusev before their match could even get started. Samoa Joe crashed Jeff Hardy's 20th anniversary celebration. Kofi Kingston defeated The Miz. Randy Orton once again attacked Rey Mysterio. And Asuka won a battle royal to be added to the TLC match with Charlotte and Becky Lynch. Has there ever been a triple threat? Well, I'm sure the answer is yes if we'd look hard enough. But this just screamed to me, they don't want either Charlotte or Becky to lose this match. We've got to have someone to take the fall. And Asuka is seen as a big enough star where it makes sense to have her in this match. She is at the level where casual fans might think that she has a shot at winning. But also, she hasn't been booked in the way that she was when she first debuted to where she could take a loss here. And I think that would be WWE's thinking.
I agree. It's hard to read it any other way at this point. The good thing about this is, though, in my opinion, and I don't totally disagree with that booking, because I don't think Asuka's involvement makes the match, even if you assume that, hey, Asuka's going to take the fall here in some way or form, I don't think her involvement makes the match less interesting. You know, we've seen Becky and Charlotte go at it countless amounts of times, and not that that match would have been bad, but adding Asuka to the mix adds another layer to it. And so even though that, yeah, there is that stigma of, hey, she's in the match just to take the pinfall, to me, it's not a negative, because I think we're going to get to see a really, really good match out of these three, and one that is just has a little more to it than another Becky and Charlotte match would have had. So, yeah, I agree that's kind of the immediate future for Asuka. I think she's doing the job in this one, but I think her involvement, though, really does increase some interest here in the short term.
This is a feud, Becky and Charlotte, as well as what's going on Raw with Ronda Rousey and all these moving parts in the women's division that's eventually going to lead to, reportedly, Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania. This is where these monthly pay-per-views hurt things. And I know I'm you know, shouting into the void here about this, because nothing's going to change. They're going to probably do more major shows on the WWE Network. But, you know, if we didn't have this December pay-per-view, we could do Charlotte Becky Lynch at Royal Rumble. Becky Lynch wins, goes to WrestleMania to face Ronda Rousey. And, of course, that all depends on what happens with the Women's Royal Rumble and who gets a shot where and things like that. But because there's a roadblock and that there's another pay-per-view between now and January, you can't do Becky and Charlotte again in December and then do it again in January and make it feel special. So you've got to add something else into the mix to differentiate it, and so that when Becky and Charlotte ultimately face off in their blow-off, we haven't seen it four or five times already. And that's kind of what this match feels like by adding Asuka to it. And I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you necessarily that Asuka does – her presence does add some intrigue to it. But my reading of it was they don't want to give away Charlotte Becky again in a singles match. We need to add someone else to it.
Yeah, no, I think you read it totally right. And this is interesting to break down here, because I think there's really it's a fun time for that women's division, especially at the top across both brands, because you have Ronda Rousey, you have Becky Lynch, you have Charlotte, right? And the question is, like, where do the pieces all go ahead of and into WrestleMania? And this match, like, coming up at TLC, this triple threat with Asuka involved in it, it may have a lot to do with what that final picture looks like at WrestleMania, because if you're going to have Becky Lynch face Ronda Rousey, you have to get her somewhere to a place where she can challenge Ronda. So if that's a Royal Rumble win, then she presumably has to lose the title. And so does she lose it here Is that a direction you think they might go, Greg? Is that kind of what you mean by your comments a little bit?
No, I don't know. I think the women's Royal Rumble complicates things because I think you'd like to have Becky and Ronda both as champions at WrestleMania. And I think they both deserve it. I think at this point, and then things could change in the next couple months, but at this point I think they've got the momentum behind them as champions to where they'll both be long-term champions by the time WrestleMania rolls around, and they'll get to have that match they didn't get to have at Survivor Series because of Becky Lynch's injury. So I really think that when you look at that Women's Royal Rumble, that's going to complicate things drastically because, as you said, you know, we've got Becky Lynch – we've got Ronda Rousey. They're both champions. Do you have one of them lose and have the loser win the Women's Royal Rumble and then challenge that other person for WrestleMania? And where does Charlotte Flair fit in here? You know, Charlotte, is someone who, you know, she wasn't able to be in the Women's Royal Rumble last year. You would think that she would be put in it this year. I really think that Women's Royal Rumble complicates things because there's a lot of momentum for Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania, but I don't think you want either one of them to lose the title between now and then. So what do you do with the Women's Royal Rumble winner? And, you know, at the end of Survivor Series, one of the things that I talked about here on the show was Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey has just it's been a feud that you draw in Charlotte and you draw in, now you're drawing in Nia Jax as the face breaker and you're drawing everybody in here, and it's, to me, there are so many complications with that. It's just – and, again, that's what we talked about after Survivor Series, is all these different directions, and now you add in the Women's Royal Rumble and how that complicates things as far as Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey both being champions now. Will they both be champions at the Royal Rumble? What happens to the Women's Royal Rumble winner? I think that, Zach, there are just so many complications and – bumps in the road if we set, and you know, this is, it's been reported, but things can change. Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania. There are so many branches off of that tree to how you get there. It's really going to be interesting to see how they do it.
Yeah, and that for me, that's one of the reasons why I'm very intrigued by this match at TLC, because on the surface, I think you're totally right. It's a match put together because there's another pay-per-view on the card, and you know they've got to put another dot in the way between point A and point B. But you dig into it a little bit further, and you know that, okay, we've got the Women's Royal Rumble coming up. We've got Ronda Rousey versus Nia Jax. We've got Nia Jax as a relatively hot act on Monday Night Raw, and you have all these different puzzle pieces, with the end game being a couple matches at WrestleMania, and the question is how do we get there? And I just am intrigued because I just have a feeling that this match is going to play into that somehow, and I'm excited to see how it goes. So I think that's why, maybe more so than the match itself, why I'm a little bit higher on it than you appear to be.
Yeah, you are, but it's like I said, I can see the perspective of adding her. I think there is some value there to it, and it'll be interesting to see. We've got two more episodes of SmackDown before TLC, so how they ingratiate Asuka into that match is going to be interesting from a storyline perspective, other than her just winning the Battle Royal.
Yeah. Hey, quick question for you, Greg.
Yeah.
Kind of outside of SmackDown, but it involves the players that we're talking about. So I'm curious as to your take. What would you be for a triple threat at WrestleMania, Charlotte, Becky, Ronda, or are you in the camp of, hey, one-on-one either way for Ronda Rousey, either against Charlotte one-on-one or against Becky one-on-one?
I I prefer the one-on-ones almost as a rule.
I mean,
so that's my immediate reaction. I think you can do a pretty effective build-up to a triple threat given these characters and where they've been the last few months and where they could go over the next few months. I think you could do an effective build. I just – when it's one-on-one, there's no hiding. You know, there's no resting outside the ring. There's, yeah. I mean, it's you and your opponent, and I think there's a lot more drama in that type of match. So this has been a very dramatic story with Becky and Ronda, and even if you include Charlotte. So I think you can really milk the drama better in a one-on-one match, and so that's why I'd prefer that for this particular instance.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the other thing is, too, I think, you know, a defining one-on-one match for Becky Lynch at WrestleMania is a really big next step for her, even if it's not in, like, the main event against Ronda Rousey, but a big-time one-on-one match at WrestleMania, high profile. Like, I think that's important as she, you know, continues to become a major, major player for WWE.
Yeah.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
This past week on SmackDown, we also had two diverging paths, Daniel Bryan and The Miz, who have been paired together in a feud for a while until Daniel Bryan turned heel. He is now at the top of the heap on SmackDown as WWE champion, having defeated AJ Styles. The Miz, a couple weeks ago, lost to a pair of jobbers in a tag team match with Shane McMahon, and now he's losing to Kofi Kingston. So, what do you make of where The Miz is going in the next few weeks and where he's been, and especially in comparison to Daniel Bryan?
Oh, well, in comparison to Daniel Bryan, he's on a completely different planet. I mean, Daniel Bryan is not only the WWE champion, but he also is in the middle of a brand new heel turn. He's got this new, the new Daniel Bryan character going, so he's got a lot of not only oomph behind him from the perspective of there's a lot going on, he's champion, but it's clear that the SmackDown brand, the writing team, is all behind him as well, because he's clearly going to be a focal point of the show moving forward in a very, very big way. The Miz, on the other hand, is it's so strange to say this, but you know, I thought going into the summer and coming out of the summer with his feud with Daniel Bryan, you know, he'd be the guy almost in Bryan's role right now, like the top, a top heel on SmackDown. And he just is not that guy right now. They've cooled him off to where he's kind of this side heel guy who's funny and he promotes his movies and he's kind of just there. And I think they're leaving money on the table with him coming out of Crown Jewel and what happened with Shane McMahon. I also thought there was maybe a babyface run in him, that they laid the table and set the foundation for a babyface run here now that they went and went ahead and turned Daniel Bryan. But we haven't seen any other iterations of that either. So he's a guy that's very much floating around the mid-card scene on SmackDown, and he is The Miz. He brings a lot to the table, and I think he's just being a little bit underutilized right now.
Samoa Joe, he was a guy who a couple months ago I advocated for beating AJ Styles for the title. He lost to him a couple times, seemed to be swimming upstream for a month or so. And now he crashed Jeff Hardy's 20th anniversary celebration, which when they first advertised it, you know, the blinking lights angle alert should have been going off in the minds of viewers. And it was a pretty good attack on Jeff Hardy this past week, and that looks like it's a direction for Samoa Joe versus Jeff Hardy. So if Joe isn't in the title picture and you want to utilize that killer instinct, that killer aspect of his character, is this a decent feud to have him go to next against Jeff Hardy?
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is, and that's all it is. You know, it's a decent mid-card feud on SmackDown, and I think, you know, Samoa Joe is he really is hitting on all cylinders right now, in my opinion. He's working at a high level, not just in the ring, but on the microphone. I think he's a guy who knows who he is as a character. He knows how to portray that character really, really well. But I think you see kind of what Vince McMahon and WWE thinks of him and thinks of what his role is on that show. I mean, he's a guy that they can move up and have main event level programs with the likes of AJ Styles, but he's not going to be a guy that they go with here. Like, the way I look at what happened on SmackDown is they chose the Daniel Bryan heel route as champion instead of Samoa Joe heel as champion. And I think that just kind of shows where Joe is right now in the pecking order on SmackDown and then within the hierarchy of WWE. That said, the deal with Jeff Hardy, it's perfect for him. I mean, he can be who he is. He can be the character that he is. He can be dangerous and maniacal and have these evil moments. Jeff Hardy is gonna sell well for him and tell that story very, very effectively. So it's a good mid-level feud on SmackDown, but I don't think anybody should have higher expectations than that for this. I think that's where this will be.
All of this setting up TLC December 16th in San Jose. The lineup thus far looks like this: Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose for the Intercontinental Championship. Braun Strowman, if he is healthy and able, will take on Baron Corbin in a TLC match. If Braun wins, Corbin is stripped of power on Raw and Braun will face Brock Lesnar for the Universal title at the Royal Rumble. If Corbin wins, he becomes permanent GM of Monday Night Raw, and a TLC match is not on the top of the gimmick match list for if I was coming back from an elbow injury that I'd want to participate in.
Yeah.
So that's just unlucky timing for Strowman there. Ronda Rousey takes on Nia Jax with the Raw Women's title on the line. Daniel Bryan versus AJ Styles for the WWE Championship. Finn Balor versus Drew McIntyre in singles action. Elias versus Lashley. The Bar in a triple threat tag match take on New Day and the Usos for the SmackDown tag titles. Becky Lynch versus Charlotte versus Asuka in another TLC match for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Quite the lineup. We're still 2 weeks out of TLC. And, of course, we here at Wrestling Night in America will have you covered that night. We'll go on the air right after TLC. Take your thoughts, calls, and opinions on that show. And you can use the same number you can call in tonight with questions for me and Zach Haydorn, 515-605-9345. Also introducing our new email address tonight, WNIALivecast@gmail.com. If you've got questions for me and my weekly rotating guest host list, then we will address it this week or next, depending on when you get your email in. So hope some people utilize that. It'll give us another avenue to reach out to the listeners. Right now, Zach, I want to talk about 205 Live, because I know you cover it for PWTorch.com.
Okay.
And we don't give that show a lot of pub here on Wrestling Night in America because there are only so many hours in the day and there's only so much wrestling one can watch. And that, unfortunately, has been scrubbed from my list over the last few weeks. So give us kind of just a broad update on 205 Live. Sell the listeners on adding 205 Live to our weekly wrestling rotation.
No problem, because I talk about this on a weekly basis on my 205 Live report for PWTorch.com. You know, here's the thing. If you want a wrestling show that's incredibly solid from an in-ring perspective, and you want crisp matches, fast-paced, and storylines that are logical and storylines that make sense, but storylines that are very, very simplistic, then this is the show for you. It is very much an A to B wrestling show. There is nothing in between. It's presented in a sports-like way. Drake Maverick's the general manager. He's working all his talent to try to, you know, bring them all up to the level where they can eventually compete for the WWE Cruiserweight Championship. That's the main narrative going on in the show. And for a lot of wrestling fans, that's important, right? Like that's a big thing that I think a lot of people might say, hey, you know, Monday Night Raw misses that. There's no narrative about everybody wanting to be champion. Well, that narrative is very prevalent on a week-to-week basis on 205 Live. I'd venture to say 80% of the promos involve the Cruiserweight Championship. On the lower part of the card, you just do have your regular, you know, wrestling feud. You've got the Lucha House Party feuding with TJP and Mike Kanellis right now. You know, it's nothing fancy. It's very much simple. You've got TJP, he's disrespecting the Lucha culture. Boom. They have a match. But within that feud, again, you have everybody involved striving for the championship. And it's not a hard narrative to follow, and it's a simple one. It's kind of pro wrestling 101. As far as the talent goes, that's where things get a little bit dicey. I mean, you don't have on this show just star power that makes you drop everything and want to watch 205 Live. You just don't have those guys right now. There's solid guys. There's guys like Mustafa Ali and Cedric Alexander, who are your top two babyfaces on the program that have really, I think, evolved leaps and bounds, not just as characters in their own right, but top level players for 205 Live. When those guys wrestle on that show, it's a big deal. And I think WWE has succeeded in that regard. That said, you know, they're not big superstars of the world. They're not Kota Ibushi. They're not big cruiserweight stars. They're cruiserweight stars on 205 Live. So that's the biggest thing that the brand's missing right now, that true standout star. And I'm not sure WWE wants to put a true standout star on that show when they have all sorts of other programs and other content to put out each week. 205 Live sounds to me at this point, it's just going to stay in its little niche area. It's going to have who it has. And it's worth checking out because there is some really good matches, but you know, you're not going to get that uber charismatic superstar. And that's what's missing here.
Yeah. I was thinking about it when you said the lack of star power. I was thinking it's almost by design. There's star that broke through the ceiling, they would be on Raw or SmackDown or something like that. One of the talents you mentioned was Mike Kanellis, who we had seen make his debut on pay-per-view with Maria last year, and then he kind of disappeared, was on Main Event for a while, and I think it surprised people to see him show up as a cruiserweight on 205 Live. So speak a little bit about how Mike Kanellis has adapted to the 205 Live environment.
He's adapted really well. I've been high on him on my reports the last, really since his debut, because he brings, you know, he still got kind of the same old kind of gimmick with Maria, and it's a pro wrestling gimmick that, you know, we've all seen before. But 205 Live, since its kind of relaunch after Enzo Amore left the company, has been very much based on athleticism in the ring, you know, very sports-like. Guy A beats guy B, and hey, okay, I'm one step closer to the championship. And with that, like, the character element of the show was sacrificed. And I think it was a good move, but it was sacrificed nonetheless. Well, Mike Kanellis brings that character and that flavor that the show needs. You know, he's not your worker guy who's going to put out a five-star classic, but he's got a great gimmick going with Maria. The other week they did this angle where Maria, you know, came out and just was crying and bawling to Drake Maverick. And because she stole Drake Maverick's attention, Kanellis was able to attack from behind the Lucha House Party with a steel chair. It's just, you know, it's character stuff like that that he brings to the table. And I think that was missing on that show for a while. And he's done a great job of bringing it back. So the sky's the limit for him on that brand. I mean, on that brand, anything can happen. Buddy Murphy, of all people, is cruiserweight champion. He's a good cruiserweight champion. So you never know what's going to happen, but he's done a really good job of kind of filling a void on that show. So more to come. And I think as he continues to perform well, he's going to get more opportunities, certainly. And Maria too. She's have been tasked with cutting, you know, 4, 5, 6 minute promos backstage and out in the ring, and she's done a great job as well. So I think it's a good step for them, and it's a good step for 205 Live. They need talent like that.
Yeah, I liked that character when it debuted, and it's good to hear that he's kind of kept that character even moving to 205 Live. So I think that can be an effective heel character. The last time many viewers saw Cedric Alexander, he was losing his cruiserweight title to Buddy Murphy in Australia at Super Showdown. What has happened with everybody's favorite, Cedric Alexander, since then?
They have told kind of a story a lot like, if you remember the story they told of Okada after he lost his IWGP Heavyweight Championship against Kenny Omega, right? Like,
yeah.
Kind of the champion, the lost champion that doesn't know what to do now that he's not the champion anymore. He's lost. He lost matches to Tony Nese right out of the gate, and that's the narrative. That's where they're at with him. They're building him back up. The narrative is he's working to get his rematch. Drake Maverick is not given a rematch yet because he's just been too down and out. He's lost too many matches out of the gate, and now he's, you know, working his way back up. So he's trying to find himself as a wrestler again. So they, you know, I didn't really buy that fully, because you can't escape the fact that Alexander is the, you know, one of the biggest names on that show, maybe surpassed by Mustafa Ali at this point. But Alexander, you know, carried that brand for a long time, and the way he acted it, he didn't really sell it enough for me. I think you, like, relating it back to the Okada story, you kind of, Okada sold that well. He brought the balloon out to the ring. Like, you kind of got the sense that, hey, he was going a little crazy. But with Alexander, it was very much the same in his presentation, the same with his promos, the same the way, you know, he wrestled. So I don't think they doubled down on it enough. I don't think they went there fully enough, but it's a good enough story for 205 Live at this point.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality-hosted podcasts.
And my last question about 205 Live is about the show as a whole, since it has been moved to being taped before SmackDown. That was one of the main criticisms of the feel of the show was – when you taped it after SmackDown, it was like a morgue. You know, people were leaving during the show. Nobody was reacting because they just sat through 2 hours of SmackDown. So has the atmosphere of the show improved since they've changed the taping schedule?
100%. I don't know if I can overstate just how important the change in that schedule has been for 205 Live. I mean, you just there's just more excitement in the building. You know, by the time the main event happens, you got a full audience that's raring to go to watch wrestling. And usually that manifests itself in a decent sized pop for the babyface coming out for the 205 Live main event, and a really solid foundation of negative and boos for the heel in the 205 Live main event. And right there, even if you just stopped it right there, that's heads and above better than it was before. Because like you said, it was a morgue in there. You had a tired crowd that had already seen all its big stars. Now you're asking them to stick around and see wrestlers that they know are defined way, 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 way down in the eyes of WWE. Here, you catch that same group of people on the other side. You get them at a moment where they're excited to watch wrestling, excited to eventually see their favorite stars. And it flipped everything on its head. You get chance for wrestlers now. You get just people just generally more engaged with the 205 Live product. So, yeah, I can't overstate it. It's been a definite positive for 205 Live without question.
And to think there were some people who were advocating that move before 205 Live even aired its first episode. When they found out that it was being taped after SmackDown, people were like, wait a minute, why are they taping after SmackDown and not before? And then we saw the first couple of shows, and it's like, okay, now really, seriously, why are they taping after, you know? And then, you know, it's crazy to think that so many people saw that as a problem, and the solution was so simple, and yet it took WWE forever to make that change.
I know. It's mind-boggling. I think, I think that WWE was just kind of, they had the tunnel vision when it came to, we need 205 Live to be live after SmackDown on the WWE Network, and yeah. Which it was for a while. It was, you know, it went live right there, right afterwards. But man, I mean, it's not worth it. It's a completely night and day feel for the show, 100%.
Well, in addition to TLC, we've also got another pay-per-view coming up around the corner. Impact Wrestling has their homecoming show on January 6th, 2019. That is their next pay-per-view, and they've begun the build to that on television. This past week's episode of Impact Wrestling started with the Lucha Brothers defeating Willie Mack and Rich Swann. LAX came out and offered a title shot for homecoming, tag title shot, to the Lucha Brothers, who accepted. They were all handshakes and hugs until LAX got backstage and were scolded by Conan for making that offer without checking with him first. He said they could be friends now, but things like this have a way of wedging themselves between friends. So we'll have to track that relationship as we get closer to homecoming. Jordynne Grace defeated Katarina in the second match on the show. Taya Valkyrie defeated Rey Lynn. Tessa Blanchard then came out post-match and attacked, choked out Taya, actually choked out a referee. And officials and referees tried to come out and talk her out of it, since they didn't try to pull her off the referee, until Gail Kim finally came out to admonish her. And the Rascals defeated Chris Bay and Mike Seidel, the brother of Matt Seidel. The Rascals making their debut as a tag team. Wentz and Desmond Xavier were the Rascals here. They are a three-man team. We also had Eddie Edwards in an asylum, being visited by his wife Alicia, and then Moose. And in the main event, Eli Drake defeated Tommy Dreamer in a no disqualification match. The main event, Zach, of Homecoming is Brian Cage against Johnny Impact for the Impact World Championship. Brian Cage bringing back Option C, created by Austin Aries, wherein he will cash in his X Division Championship in order to get a shot at the Impact World title. I want to get your thoughts on that idea. Like, what is that effective, do you think, in just kind of changing things up and sort of using it almost as a Money in the Bank briefcase? Do you think it does a disservice to the X Division title to be used as a pawn in this way? What are your thoughts on this whole Option C idea that Impact has used in the past?
Yeah, you know, I'm not a fan. I've never really been a fan of it, just because, and maybe it's because I've liked the X Division title, or not really the title, but I don't like to see any title be sacrificed like it has to be for this option to be a viable one. I mean, you have guys who are out there defending the belt and holding on to that championship, saying, "Oh, you know what? I'm gonna just let this thing go and cash it in for a shot at the bigger title." And yeah, I think we all know that these wrestlers look, the narrative should be they want the most important title possible, but in the narrative of the story, I don't think you have to throw other championships that the company has under the bus in order to tell that story. You can just weave it into larger storylines with these guys. So I just have never liked the idea of sacrificing a championship that's within the company to move up the card to something bigger. It's just not something that jives with me. I just don't like to see belts sacrificed that way.
Yeah, I have a problem with that too, but Impact has never treated the X Division title, well, they have at times, but it's been a long time, since they've treated the X Division title as anything really important. So Unfortunately, I don't think it's hurting anything right now to have Brian Cage cash it in. If you wanted to make the X Division title and put it on par with the Impact World title, then yeah, I would say that there's a problem here. But because it's always been treated as a second-class citizen in Impact, or for much of Impact's existence it has, it's hard for me to argue when they clearly don't have any ideas of making it more than it is, which is a secondary singles title in Impact. So
yeah,
that's kind of where I stand on the issue. We are going to go to our go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I was going to chime in real quick, and I do think you're right on the money with that. It's just like, to me, then, and I don't know your thoughts on this, but if you're going to have that belt or that championship mean that, then just have it mean that. That's where I have a problem. Like, it's serving these dual meanings is where it gets thrown all out of whack for me. It really, I just don't like it.
Yeah, I can understand. You know, I get a sense that you're a bit of a purist, and that's not an insult, but that's
right.
You know, when you see the belt being used in that way, that's not how titles should be used. You know, that's historically not how titles have been portrayed. They're something you work hard for and earn and want to keep it and want to fend off all challengers, not voluntarily give it up to take a step up the ladder, which is basically what Brian Cage is doing in this case. So yeah, it's
I couldn't have said it better myself. Brian.
Okay,
there you go.
Great. Yeah, it's a mystery, but it's Impact Wrestling, so there's lots of mysteries there. We are about ready to wrap things up here. I'll touch on NXT first, Zach, before we totally close up shop here. This past week, Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch defeated the Mighty. That was the first match on the show. This is a taping from San Jose. Post-match, the heels, the Mighty, attacked Lorcan and Burch. EC3 defeated Marcel Bartel, Mia Yim over Vanessa Bourne, and Lars Sullivan over Keith Lee. This show was basically a house show that was taped. There were some reports that this was kind of a test for future house shows that would be airing on the network. What did you make of – I kind of already asked you this question with 205 Live, but the atmosphere of this show was different than what you got in Full Sail. Better, worse, kind of the same? What was your take on that?
You know, ultimately, I'll say, you know, it's not leaps and bounds better like my analysis was for 205 Live, but it was a little bit better, because I think with Full Sail, you know, when you tape there, you can kind of feel the flow of the crowd as those tapings go on, and you can feel that week to week when NXT TV airs. Well, here, you know, you've got kind of that raw audience right there, and I think that's a positive. That said, I think the Full Sail atmosphere is always very, very much so on point for NXT and for what the NXT brand is. So I don't know that it's like totally different, but I like the rawness of it. I like the fact that it came off that way and you had that kind of edgier feel. So that I liked, but ultimately I don't think it's a huge difference.
Yeah. Well, Lars Sullivan is getting called to the main roster very soon. Don't know if he's going to end up on Raw or SmackDown yet. I kind of assumed that with Keith Lee being the newcomer to NXT, with Lars Sullivan being out the door soon, that this was an opportunity to give Keith Lee a big win to help boost his stock in NXT. And Lars Sullivan picks up the win in the main event of NXT TV. What, if anything, does that tell you about Keith Lee's standing in NXT? Do you expect him to get a rematch with Lars Sullivan in the coming weeks before Lars gets called up to the main roster?
I have to think that that's where they're going with this, to tell, you know, instead of Lee just, you know, beating Sullivan in a one-off without any build, I think they're maybe trying to lay, you know, 1-3 week story arc to this where Lee comes out a little bit of a bigger star after beating Sullivan, because I thought the same thing that you did. I heard, you know, this match is going down. Okay, Lee's going to get this victory he's going to kind of take the ball from Sullivan in NXT, and Sullivan's going to move up to the main roster. But that didn't happen. So a little bit of a curveball. I was surprised. I did enjoy the match. Like, there's something something to be said for two massive guys, you know, going at it one-on-one in the ring. So I did like that, but I think the goal here is to just tell a little bit of a longer story for Keith Lee here, and to make that eventual win just a little bit more important than it would have been in a one-off match like it was this week.
Yeah, definitely. And that's something we'll have to keep an eye on over the next few weeks, is the follow-up to Keith Lee versus Lars Sullivan, see if anything further does come out of that. I did like how they set up this match the previous week, which was taped before NXT TakeOver, I believe.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll have to see where that goes. That brings us to the end of the line here on Wrestling Night in America for Sunday, December 2nd. Zach, before you go, you do a ton of stuff for PWTorch.com, so just give the listeners out there a little taste of what you do and how they can find you.
Yeah, okay. Well, you'd start off your wrestling week with my two TV reports for PWTorch.com.
90
the first
seconds.
One, is on Monday night. It's the Alternative Perspective report for Monday Night Raw, right there alongside Wade Keller's, and I'll just go through the show much like he did, or he does, and just provide commentary on what's happening and analysis on segments and matches, top to bottom, live as the show is going on. And then a little bit later in the week, usually sometime on Thursday afternoon, my 205 Live report will be up on PWTorch.com as well.
Same 60 seconds.
Rundown of what happened on the show and my analysis on those happenings. And then on Fridays, for VIP members only, my show On the Canvas drops, and it's a show that's rooted in the artistry of the wrestling business. So we kind of leave storylines at the door, leave booking decisions and who wins or loses at the door for the most part, and just talk about the art of wrestling, whether it's a match or a promo or a backstage vignette of some kind. I take a current event from that week and analyze it from that artistic side, with that artistic perspective. So you can catch back episodes in the archives on matches like
10 seconds.
Ricochet. Rich Fan and I did a breakdown of Brock Lesnar versus Daniel Bryan from Survivor Series. There's shows in there about Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman, Sasha Banks and Bayley promos. Greg, you and I did a preview show for Evolution, which is there for you guys to check out. So it's called On the Canvas, and it's there for PW Torch VIP members. So go VIP and check it out.
Zach, you recently lost, as many have, a battle against the Twitter gods, and you've
they
been forced
me. They
to
beat me down.
To use a new Twitter handle, so I'll let you throw that out so people can follow you on Twitter.
I appreciate it. Z Hadorn Torch. That's Z-H-E-Y-D-O-R-N Torch.
And you can find me, of course, at Greg M. Parks. If you want to know the latest on Wrestling Night in America, I usually tweet out our guest that week as soon as I get them wrapped up. So you can follow me to see who, if you're a frequent listener, who's going to be on the show this coming week. And again, we have a new email, so I encourage you to use that for questions or comments you have for future episodes of Wrestling Night in America, WNIA, livecast@gmail.com. So, Zach, I thank you for joining me again here on Wrestling Night in America. And don't forget that we'll be back here same time, PWTorchLivecast.com. We'll be back next week, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.